that. If anyone doesn't have a copy of the program, just indicate, it will be made available to you. Well, I understand that the team on my left is also led by an acting director general. Ignorance. One minister, two dishes. Mm-hmm. So we have water affairs and environmental affairs. Well, DG, the way we are going to run our processes are quite simple. We'll start with introduction. And the officials introduce themselves from environmental affairs as well as water affairs, and national treasury, and the Auditor General's office has managed to be represented. If represented, you introduce yourselves, and then members of parliament. Then we can then engage. But what we're going to do in our program, we'll start with environmental affairs, because Honorable Singh has a commitment that should see him temporarily out of the meeting, and then he'll join us a little later. So let me hand over to you, DG, and your officials from environmental affairs and then water affairs, just like that.
Thank you. Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. I'm Lucy Paul Mwaba, the Director General for the Department of Environmental Affairs. And I have the department team quickly. They will introduce themselves, starting with the Chief Operating Officer.
My name is Lisa McCourt. I'm the Chief Operating Officer of the Department of Environmental Affairs.
My name is Esther Makau. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for Environmental Affairs.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Sekwadi Rakoho, Chief Director, Supply Chain Management.
My name is Albi Modisa, Head of Communications and Environmental Affairs.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Bonfini Sango. I'm a Director in the Office of the DG.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Boem Kalipi. I'm in the Minister's Office. Advisor to the Minister.
Morning, Members. My name is Babalo Manyaranyaka. I am in Water Affairs, Business Performance Monitoring and Evaluation.
Morning, Honorable Members. My name is Mandla Machabula. I'm the Officer for the Minister.
We heard that you are Matebula, but your position, I think, there was a bit of disturbance in the process. Maybe. No, Mr. Matebula.
Okay, I'm the media liaison officer.
Oh, okay. All right, okay. Comrade Minister, welcome. Welcome.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members. I'm Trevor Balser, the Acting DG for the Department of Water Affairs.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Thabiso Funda Kubi, the Chief Financial Officer for Department of Water Affairs.
Good morning, Honourable Members. Marissa, National Treasurer.
Thank you. Orissa, General of Office, you introduce yourself.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Chris from Drainsburg, and I'm the Senior Manager responsible for the Audit on Environmental Affairs and Tourism.
Good morning, Marijke Slegans, Performance Auditing, Auditor General.
What?
Thank you very much, Ren Singh, Member of DOPA.
Good morning, Chair. Pierre Robbie, Member of SCOPA.
Good morning, Sipom Fundi, Senior Member of the Committee.
Good morning, Roy Ainsley, Member of SCOPA.
Good morning, Capello Chuan, Member of SCOPA.
Good morning, Saranian, member of the committee.
Good morning, Yemi Sinalongo, member of the committee.
Right, thank you. I'm from Retembo Godi. I share the committee. Once again, Comrade Minister, we're some new members in the...
Good morning, Honourable Chair. My apologies indeed for a bit of a disturbance when we walked in, trying to rearrange the chairs. I don't know why. But I just got a bit held up along the road, unfortunately, for some reasons. I really want to apologize profusely. My name is Edna Mulewa, the Minister of Water and Environmental Affairs. Thank you.
Right. Once again, thanks very much for being here, COVID Minister, and leading the team. As you will be aware, we have had a couple of near misses about meeting and not meeting in the first quarter, and finally we have been able to synchronize our time to be able to have this engagement. As our letter of invitation indicated, we are engaging to look at the report of the Auditor General on the use of consultants in departments. And I'm sure, as you are aware, we've had engagements with quite a number of other departments, and our engagement today forms part of that process. We have read the report of Auditor General and have gone to other departments in terms of how they manage these processes, and we thought that the this department also needs to form part of the engagement that we should have. So we're happy that we've finally been able to make time to look at some of these areas. I'm sure you'll be recalled that we have in the past had engagements with the department around the final reports, some of the challenges that were there, that are there. This time around, specifically on the performance audit. So, what we're going to do, Comrade Minister, as I already indicated, we'll hand over to Honorable Singh, and I think the focus will be on environmental affairs. Of course, at the end of the engagement, if there are issues that the Minister would want to talk to, in relation to the issues that we are dealing with here today, would afford you that opportunity. But, of course, throughout the engagement, we would nonetheless still expect that there are areas in which you can come in to give more clarity anytime. It will be fine to do so. Honorable thing, just a minute.
Just before we go to Honorable Singh, may I just express our appreciation for your ability to work with us to really be patient in synchronizing the dates, as you said, that we've been trying to get this meeting sitting. We really appreciate this engagement. I just want to say, perhaps formally for this meeting, the invitation, Honorable Chair, was saying that Minister should be present for purposes of observing. I think it was clarified better now in your discussion, because indeed it is a bit of a challenge. The letter was saying observing, and it wasn't quite clear to me as to what then do you do when you observe. But I think it might be useful if in the future it is written that way, that you would be able to engage going forward. Thank you.
Thanks, Comrade Minister. You can be sure some people will be suspended immediately after this meeting for that kind of a construction. It was not supposed to be like that, but anyway, thanks for clarifying that part. But anyway, Honourable Singh.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Minister, colleagues, and thank you to the Honourable Ainsley and the Chairperson for doing that. Environmental Affairs goes first. I do have another commitment at Appropriations Committee, so I just thought I could go first. It would help me to go there. Chairperson, I think the first point that I want to make is that we are aware as COPA of the splits in the department. Water affairs, environmental affairs, and what that may have caused in terms of moving staff around. But I think I'm approaching my question on the basis that while departments may have shifted and ministers may have shifted, etc., and tourism and things like that, but officials remain the same to a large extent. So the questions will be still relevant to even the current officials that are here. The second point that I want to make, Chairperson, is that you must appreciate that this is a sample audit, because the total expenditure on consultants, and I think the minister and the acting DG and others are quite aware of the definition of consultants as from the side of the Auditor General. But when you look at the use of consultants in the Department of Environmental Affairs as it was then, the majority, I would say 80%, is on consultants as we know them, warm body people, not contracts and things like that, because the table on page 59 of the auditor's report indicates that is the case. So having said that, I think one needs to find out from the department for our specific questions is that the Auditor General has picked up about 10% of the contracts in value. Is the department or has the department done anything since this audit report has been published to look at all the other contracts which have not been looked at in detail by the audit and to try and look for kinds of irregularities and things like that that they have identified in this 10% sample? That's my first general question.
May I, before the DG responds, request that we remember to switch our cellular phones off, please. Not even on silent or vibration, because when it vibrates or rings on silent, whatever is being said is not recorded. That's the tragedy of it all. So that needs to be off, because anyway, we'll be out of this meeting. So in less than no time, we intend to have a day more today. That's switch off, and then,
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Member. I would answer by first say that the audit was undertaken on work that was done previous years. Now, the interventions that the department has focused on is interventions to improve control processes and various other aspects that were pointed out from this audit report going forward. So if I were to just give you an example on the planning and appointment process.
No, let's do this. So that we don't... So in relation to your question, mm-hmm. the department has not gone to review any of the other contracts outside the sample that are done by the AG.
Yes.
Yes, okay. That's fine. I think that's what you wanted to get.
Okay.
So that you can come to your substantive questions.
All right, thanks.
Sure.
Okay, so thank you for that. So almost 500 million rand worth of contracts that were awarded to consultants have not been re-looked at. And our job at SCOPA is, like you always say, is to find out what killed the patient. We are doing a post-mortem. And I find it quite regrettable that the department didn't see fit, the management of the department didn't see fit, that they should also look at all the other contracts with consultants to pick up any of the kind of issues that the Auditor General has picked up in this particular report. But I'll leave it at that. The Auditor General here has only audited 15 projects. And they have very clearly identified the areas in which they have found shortcomings, planning and appointment, and I think it's a very, very well done report, even if we may say so. And thank the Auditor General for that. If we look at page 59, of the report of the Auditor General, where the Office of the AG starts with planning and appointment. I mean, it makes sight for sore eyes when one sees and reads there that there's an 81% increase between estimated project costs and contract costs. And if we go to the next two pages, we find details of all projects and by how many percent they exceeded what was estimated. For example, in the first case, developing a national framework, it was exceeded by 288%. Where the estimated cost was 1 million, the contract amount was 3.8 million, and that's a 288% increase. And this begs the question, Chairperson, is that is there or are there people in the department who are responsible for these contracts with consultants? Firstly, what kind of system exists within the department where management says, well, we don't have the capacity to do A, B, or C. It's a very specialized area. And we need to outsource this. And we need to outsource this to a consultant. Is there expertise within the department for that kind of decision to be taken? And then for the term of reference for a contract to be drawn up? Because it would seem to me here that there isn't that kind of there aren't those kinds of people within the department that take these kinds of decisions, and hence we find you estimate 1 million and then you end up with almost 4 million. So can you just give me a sense, and maybe while you're talking, acting DG, tell us what these vacancy rates like in the department, because AG has reported 30% the average vacancy rate during that period under review. Maybe you can also touch on that.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Firstly, let me just clarify the issue of estimating the amount. The process of estimation, figures that the AG refers to are the figures that are reflected in a submission. When we are going to appoint a consultant, firstly, we have areas where we, as an organization, we know these are the areas for outsourcing, and we have reasons that are outlined in that there is a document that clearly defines that. Then the process then keeps us by the line manager submitting, making an MO to the DG for approving the principle of outsourcing.
I think, DG, let's move to the issues around the variation from the original contract to the final amount. As I said, you are the health department we're dealing with. So I'm sure in engaging all these other departments, we've had enough sense about processes. You know, know that are involved in terms of needs determination to the acquisition services and all that kind of stuff. The number of these questions, your vacancy rate, and how it would happen that you would advertise a tender for 1 million, but at the end we find out the contract amount is 3.8 million. How does this happen? How do we explain this?
We don't advertise a tender for 1 million. The tender, when you go, it goes out, it asks a competent institution to submit a proposal. That is the difference. The figure that is reflected on the memo is a budgeted figure in the department. Then there is prescripts in terms of treasury that allow you to then move and shift funds.
Is your explanation intended to say there should be no concern about the estimated cost and the ultimate cost, like in this particular instance where the estimated cost was 1 million and at the end the amount that was paid or used was 3.8 million?
Yes, Honorable Chair, I think there should be no concern basically because the figure that is finally the figure that is indicated there, varying from the million was a budgeted figure. The actual tender amount was quoted.
What was the basis of that budget?
It was what was available in terms of allocation from the National Treasury.
Chairperson, I think this is all about budgeting and planning. I mean, you can't say in your budget, in your draft budget or budget that you present, I'm going to spend 1 million and you end up spending 4 million. Because at the end of the day, although you are allowed for environment and things like that, I mean, there should be a more scientific way of estimating, closer than what has been done here, what the cost of the service would be. And there seems to be no scientific way here that this is being done. I mean, from 288% variance down to 110% variance. The total variance in your consultants, you budget the 22,832,000. You actually spent 41 million. Now, surely Treasury is not going to just start approving these environments and things like that. There has to be a more, scientific way of saying, well, we budgeted 35 million, we now at 40 or 41 million. That's more or less acceptable, but not from 22 to 42. There has to be a better explanation, sorry, I think, DG, to saying, well, the estimated amount are just estimated, because budgets are prepared on the basis of estimates.
Well, there is no other way, unfortunately, Chair and Honourable Members. The way we budget and the way, yes, maybe the level of accuracy, because the scientific way of arriving at the budget or at an estimated cost would be to first ask those people that will tender, how much are you going to ask?
Yeah,
and
maybe,
then that is not allowed.
Maybe let's study these two things. I think the issue of a budget and estimated cost are two separate things. Estimated cost and available budget, I think, are two separate things. If you say I only had 1 million, that's what you have in your budget. But if you say the estimated cost will be 1 million, there must have been some process of determining why you say it was 1 million and not 2 million. And if you say you estimated to cost 1 million and it ends up costing you 3 million, then you should be worried about the way in which costs are determined or estimated in the department. And what we're dealing with is the report of the AG, unless the AG must come in. Estimated cost, 1 million. Contract amount, 3.8 million. There is a variance.
We have changed the submission because in our source documents that the AG looked at, it's an estimated budget. That's a budget that's available for that activity.
So it is actually written wrongly to say estimated cost by the Auditor General.
The way it is written in our submissions, Chair, what we are changing now is to then actually show what is available budget and then estimated cost is what we would have to have a question mark on, because that's how we write it in our submission. So we would have to change, basically.
No, how fine. What I'm asking is what is written on page 60 as estimated cost. Are you suggesting that it's wrong?
It's the way we interpret it in the department. We interpret that as a budget that's available, not the actual estimated cost.
So,
in all our submissions.
Indeed, in the case of the supply installation and measures.
I'm very sorry.
Please accept my humble apologies. The supply installation management of air quality monitoring stations we estimated at 8 million, and the contract amount was 12.5 million. I mean, there's a 4.5 million run. Can we just ask the AG, for an interpretation of the estimated cost and see how it differs or aligns with what the thinking of the department is in that aspect?
Look,
exchange rate on the air quality monitoring stations because we procure them from an international supply.
Yeah, ma'am, that might be
but
case.
Look, if you go back to page 6 on your left-hand side, all those projects have the same challenge in terms of estimated cost and amount spent. So this one will not be an exception because it was procured overseas or whatever. It's a general, and it's what it's what we've seen throughout in terms of budgeting and the escalation of costs. But let's say from the Auditor General, so that we were able to have clarity on the matter, because for us it talks to budgeting, it talks to planning.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Member. I think it's very important to note that part of your need determination must include an accurate estimate of what it's going to cost. So once the submission is going to the DD for her approval, she signs off not only on what is expected for the project, but also what is expected in terms of money, because that is the money, as she correctly indicated, that is available. So as soon as you apologies. As soon as you approve that estimated budget, that is what is available. So going forward, if you engage into more contracts or at higher cost than what you estimated, you will have to reprioritize. And you will see in the report there is in fact a case in 2006 where due to reprioritization they couldn't go forward with appointing the consultant, and it's definitely coming back to a planning issue where you only can contract and commit for what you have available and prioritize prior to going out and saying we're going to advertise all these tenders and at the end it's going to cost us 80% more than initially estimated.
I think we have to thank the AG's office, and I know if the DG agrees with that kind of view that is being expressed on how one needs to look at the appointment.
Just a minute, let's give the minister.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. May I just come in? I think the question you're asking is actually very important. Whether this, to understand whether this is actually an available amount of money or not. And as AG says, I hear confirming that this is money that's available. That's what I had. The budget that's available. But there has to be planning. I see a nodding. I want to understand if this is what you said. Because body language is a problem.
Honourable team members, Minister, what we're saying is when you go into the needs determination process, part of it is to estimate the cost, to do an accurate cost estimation of what it is going to cost you to appoint this specific consultant. But from our conversation with the department, they indicated to us that that amount there is only limited to the available budget. So what we are saying is during that process already, as part of your needs determination, you should go into a process of more accurately confirming the amount and not just indicate what is available on the budget, because as I indicated going forward you can run into a situation where you will have to reprioritize on money to be able to only fulfill some contracts and not all as initially started.
Let me come back to I'm not trying to condone the planning issue versus the spending, Chair. But I think let's just talk about reality, because as I leave this room, I would want to keep our managers accountable on matters that I think are actually practically possible. Number one is that, by the way, this is the 2006 thing, which actually happened to ask a question about capacity, which happened at the time when there was way below, where we were way below capacity at the time. But coming back to this issue is that the needs determination exercise could tell us that for these projects that are available, that are to be implemented, we need for each project maybe 3 million, 3.8, 4.5, 4.6, the needs analysis says that. And it means therefore that you have to go and get that needs analysis from somebody scientifically who is a service provider potentially. Because that's where you, that's the only way you can actually determine it scientifically, to get that from a service provider. Are we saying practically possible? And is it what perhaps we should do as a practice living here? Because as I say, I want to understand, living here, that there should be that inquiry or scanning the market and possibly asking those who would be potential service providers. Number one. Number two, linked to that particular issue, Chair, I think it will be important. You know, I'm trying to really understand the questions I'm asking, and I'm making a statement in those questions as well. The question I'm asking, therefore, again, just highlighting honorable members, Chair, is that our APP requires us to actually do all the things. By the way, limited funds from allocations of funds, understandably so. What do you do? What do you leave? There could be a suggestion that in terms of a cost estimate that you can get from service providers, by the way, if you do that, then you have to drop some of these projects which are actually on APP. What do you do? Lastly, what is reprioritization environments meant for later on, if this is actually a final outcome and a cost that would be a value for money to be spent on the project? I would really worry, Honorable Chair, and I worry, if a project has got an escalation of this nature, and the escalation has got no value for money, it's an escalation that led to by probably some crooked things. I would worry. But if it is for value for money, and it's for a variation, that you couldn't actually determine the needs assessment right from the beginning because you are afraid that it leads to a talking to a service provider that will actually have insights about the thing is really what I think we need to deal with.
Chair, I just want to ask the DD then the follow-up. Thank you.
Before you ask the DD, I think let us lay this matter to rest and clarify it properly. I think the point we're making, Comrade Minister, and I think we're slow to grasp what the DG was saying, because it's something we had not heard before, that if you have a project that will cost you 3 million, but the budget that you have is 1 million, instead of writing the correct cost estimate of 3 million, you write 1 million because that's what you have. I'm saying that is what has been the challenge in terms of digesting what is in the report of the Auditor General, because it says estimated cost, and yet in terms of the practice of the department, estimated cost meant the money available in the budget. Even if a project is going to cost 5 million, if they have 1 million, they will say estimated cost 1 million instead of the actual cost of the project. And then when they now implement the project, and the project is 3 million, then through environment and reprioritization, they have to get some extra money. So what it then reads when it's reported is that now there's been an escalation because the initial estimated cost of 1 million. Mm. So it is that use of simple English. Instead of saying budget available 1 million, you say estimated cost 1 million. I think that was the gray area that we needed clarified so that going forward we have an understanding of what it is that we're dealing with.
Yeah, that's what we buffer in terms of practice now, to make sure that it's clearly understood that in terms of what is allowed in fact in the public service, we have more an estimation which is based on budget that's available. Because even when we do the E&E with Treasury,
during budgeting cycle. We indicate projects, we put budgets, and based on, in fact, in some instances, when you put your budget submission, you have 15 million as your request. But then if you then get a budget of 2 million or 3 million in terms of your final allocation, then you adjust and cut your cloth according to what's available and still then go through the process of tailoring out so that you then get a real sense of what is it going to cost.
No, that's fine. I think in that column of estimated cost, it should have been budget available.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would have cleared the writer, because a person who is not here who reads this report would say, well, the department budgeted 1 million. This is what it was going to use, but it ended up using this amount. So it says there are escalations. It says the planning was not accurate.
Thank you, Chair. Just to finalize our understanding then, can Treasury just tell us, with all other departments and this department, is this the way things usually happen?
Thank you, Honourable Member. We do find that it is difficult for departments to properly estimate the cost of their expenditure. The sense is that the departments collect more information about the work that is needed, about the current rights that are being paid to improve those estimates. But we do understand that they will never be perfect until the final tender price comes in. However, the responsibility remains with the accounting officer to ensure either that there are sufficient funds to cover that liability, and then, as the auditors indicate, that the undertaking of the work still makes sense if the price comes in at a higher level before agreeing to the contract.
Thank you. And then in DG, I'm quite sure you will assure the committee that as you're moving forward, this kind of trend that pertained in 2006 is not there now. You are both much closer with your budget and actually what your contract comes out to. Are you still quite a long way off?
I cannot lie here and say we are closer. Right now, I think I've asked the internal audit to start looking at all of the tenders as we proceed, and we then going to continuously do the assessment.
Now that's encouraging to know that you're looking at that. But I think the question of value for money for these consultants, I mean, who monitors, who rolls up terms of reference, are you satisfied that even in these cases where the budgeted amount and the contract amount were up to 200%, that one received value for money and that you had to engage consultants and didn't have internal capacity to carry out some of these functions? And I'm just talking in general terms. Some of them are highly specialized, but in general terms.
Yes, Chair, and honorable members, we pay specific attention to what we outsource. We don't have the capacity internally to undertake the activities that we outsource as a department, as a general trend. Two, I think the issue of the terms of reference, we can continuously improve in that regard, because terms of reference are drafted by the line manager that requires that activity. We are not perfect. Some don't quite. I think with experience they improve. Others are better than others. So that is an area where we have also put a specific focus. I have what is called now a specifications committee to actually help in terms of tightening that area in making sure that we improve into the future things.
Thank you. I just didn't want to hear that you're using consultants to draw terms of reference for the appointment of consultants, and I'm satisfied that you're saying that's not the case. So that's good. Chairperson, I don't know if I can take that particular aspect any further. It's on planning, it's on appointment. It seems that they are on the right track. But as I say, from what we see before us, it's cause for concern where you see these huge increases. It just says that there isn't good planning that's taking place, or that took place at that time in the department. Now, if we move on to the next aspect with planning and appointments, the process of appointing consultants and the delays. On an average, we see there was 212 days delay from the time you started the contract, initiated until the time the tender went out and the appointment and things like that. Can we just get a general sense of why this might have taken place at the time and what's the position at the moment?
Thanks, Chair and Honourable Member. Again, I think this is an area where we are improving. The Departmental Adjudication Committee would meet from time to time, and there would have been cancellations in that over that time. Therefore, there were delays, I think, as correctly indicated. I have now put in place a system of matching the demand plan with actually the dates of meetings. And the line managers are working on their project plans for each of the areas where when we submit to Treasury at the end of the financial year, we submit a demand plan. And against that demand plan, we have project plans and indications of when the Departmental Adjudication Committee would be meeting to make sure that they process tenders timely. So that's an area of improvement.
What would your average appointment time be now?
CFO, can you check that? I don't have the now. Average.
Thank you, DG. Based on the study that we conducted from this exercise, like in this case of like 147 days which have been identified by the Auditor General, we tried to look from the time of advertising a tender, sorting the tender, the bid evaluation committee sitting, then the Departmental Acquisition Council, committee, then appointment, then contracting, and after studying. It is actually, we just used one. It takes us about 125 days. That's why the DD says we've now tried to look at the demand plan to say, actually, in a year, how many tenders can we close looking at this cycle? We haven't reduced yet, but we calculated it to take it a long time. Because the very same people...
But you say you've only studied one.
We've looked at all of them.
All of them.
And we realize that it takes about 120 days, because then you sort, then you award, then you vet the contract, then you sign all those. But now we're working in our demand management and to see how we can shorten the period. We haven't really put a time in to see how much is it going to take this cycle of procurement.
Now, one of the reasons cited here by the Office of the AG is that the delays on, this is on page 60, the delays were mainly caused by poorly coordinated planning and activities that we know already. As tender and evaluation meetings were frequently cancelled or postponed. Now when that happens, it's the impact on the taxpayer in terms of escalation and factors like that. Now, at this moment, at that time, who sat on these committees and what reasons did they give for not attending or why were meetings being cancelled and what system do you have in place now to make sure that if a bid evaluation committee has to sit and assess one or two tenders, that they are there, they have the capacity to look into this tender and things like that?
Chair and Honourable Members, the committee, the Departmental Adjudication Committee, is made up of line managers and supply chain in the office and the financial team. Ideally, in a normal business, you would have a buying committee that does not have people that are involved in other functions. We are a small department, and most of those line managers are chasing other targets, and therefore there has been a tendency then that we did not have a quorum, and the chairperson quorum would not be available. So I have now put in place a system of three board chairpersons and a chairperson, and the quorum also has been revised down in order to make sure that there is a Departmental Adjudication Committee. But again, our other issue is that we still don't want the Adjudication Committee to produce or process things to low quality. We want as much input from other managers in the process of making that decision. So we're trying to balance the quality versus also the members, the number of people that would participate from line, so that it's not the same people from the bunch that has put forward a tender that then adjudicate over it. We need to be able to manage all of those risks across the organization. Thanks.
But lowering the quorum does not have the potential of affecting the quality of the process.
From a quorum of about 12 people, now it's around 8.
So it's still reasonably fine. We could have done well with the whole 15 or 12 people. It would have been better. But in light of the fact that I get in trouble if I don't process them reasonably on time, I have to manage that risk also.
Continue, Honorable.
Thank you, Chair. There's just one question I think the DG needs on. Your vacancy rate, earlier on I said it was 30 point something, but what is it at the moment?
No, it has actually gone down below 10%. So we have filled posts.
Filled posts or cancelled?
No, we've made sure, one, I do not have people that were focusing. We have had to grow our internal control capacity. And our cost of internal audit function, in fact, our audit function was outsourced, internal audit. Now we are putting a bit of capacity internally because we need to have more proactive auditing done internally in order to pick up on all of this right throughout the year. So we have grown the establishment. The minister has approved it.
But still small. Early on, we have a small department.
It is a small department compared to other departments. The smallest department, I think, in government currently.
What we would like to hear is that the people that you've appointed, some of them could replace these consultants, and the need to outsource work because you have internal capacity to carry out some of this work. That's what we'd like to hear.
I can confirm that, Chair and Honourable Members, however, there are areas where we will never not outsource. So those areas where it's just specific areas of the work of the department.
No, I think it's specific focuses on your internal audit function.
Yes.
Internal audit function.
On internal audit function, it's cost-sourced now. We have aspects that are outsourced, and we're still building our internal capacity in that regard. We have two positions that we've created. We have a director now, and we have two deputies that are still being recruited.
Chair, I know the Department of Water Affairs, and I just received this document now, has given us a document on shareholding of companies, that's Water Affairs. But can DG of Environment Affairs provide us with a list of all these contractors, consultants that were appointed during this period under review? The names of the companies and the names of the shareholders or the members of those CCs and things like that. We just want to see, because we found in other instances that In many cases, there were links between consultants and names of other companies and common consultants doing work for certain departments and enriching themselves. And also, in that, if you can tell us whether there were any former officials in whatever capacity that worked for the department that now are members or working for some of these consulting companies.
We can provide that in the document there. We have done the list of all consultants that we've used. There is the box has got all the names of consultants in, but we were not asked them to go into the their registrar information, which can also be done. But all of that information can be made available. But all the consultants that we used from 2006 up until last financial year, 2010-11, they are in that list. Thank you. We can definitely then get into the further information if required.
Okay. Thank you, President. This was prepared by one of our researchers. I thought it came from the department. Thanks. On water affairs. Thank you very much. I think on the question of the delays and the appointment process, one cannot pursue that any further. I cannot pursue that, but maybe colleagues will want to ask specific questions because there's a whole list of consultancy projects that are listed there. Now, another key area that the Office of the AG has identified is where consultancy contracts were awarded where the terms of reference were not complete, and that's why early on I asked the question about who draws up the terms of reference, etc., etc., etc. And, in the first case that they cite, Development South African Air Quality Information System, I mean, where the consultant was appointed, the person didn't have expertise, did not have the required technical skills. I mean, how can such a consultant have been appointed in the first instance? Who appointed them? Who was the bid evaluation committee at the time? Are any of those people still in the employ of the department. And how can such a situation arise?
Thank you, Chair, honorable members. I think one of the things that you would also find when you look at that register of consultants that we use, that there are certain areas of expertise that is a new work, groundworking, new work. It hasn't been, we cannot benchmark against any other system, and the air quality information management system was such a system. It was groundwork, breaking work that we were doing. So whilst we had as a department an idea of what we want to get out of it, we had nothing to benchmark it against, and there were failures in terms of looking, for example, at the expertise that was limited in there was not on air quality information, but was on technical systems in terms of the IT side of things. So the user requirements from an information perspective and the system requirements from a technological perspective did not meet in that specific process. Now, if, again, it's included in a document, there, some of the system improvements that we've made now is in our bid specification commitment. We now include the expertise in all the relevant fields. So if you have a system that has IT aspects to it, there is standard requirements built into that specifications now, as well as the ICT, the head of ICT sitting in that committee and ensuring that in both the specifications as well as the evaluation and the awarding, those requirements are met in terms of our master systems plan requirements. In terms of who the members of the specific committee is, I unfortunately don't know who was.
Maybe some information that can be sent to us. So we just want to see if any of them are still there and still doing something that they don't know how to do. And I'm not going to talk about IT and CETA and how you use them and not. I think other Ms. Ainsley might touch on that a little later on with your relationships with CETA and how things are progressing in that regard. Now, with this specific example, were there any loss to the department in terms of consultants not capable of doing the job and they get the contract and then they can't perform? Is there any money that's been recovered from them and that kind of thing?
As far as I'm concerned, I was asking our chief for supply chain to respond. But as far as I'm concerned, we have no losses. Where we've had to terminate contracts because of limited delivery, that was done, and it was also done not at the negative cost to the department, per se. So in that regard, I think we continuously improve in terms of how we control the delivery of the consultants.
Now, Chairperson, there have been reports of senior officials of the department having been suspended, having gone through investigations and things like that, and I don't want to mention the names. You know who they are, and I think the minister knows who they are.
This department?
Yeah. Or is it water affairs? No. But was it not water affairs and environment at that time? It was environmental affairs and tourism.
Yeah.
Is there anybody within environmental affairs that is being investigated for any wrongdoing, any criminal proceedings, are there charges preferred for any wrongdoing of whatsoever within the Department of Environmental Affairs?
Chair, I can actually get the. We normally receive anonymous and or in terms of the fraud and corruption hotline. And those get investigated to conclusion, and those will report on also to the audit and in the audit process. So every financial year, those are covered and captured in the regularity audits. Right now, I cannot remember which specific cases. I had a few cases last year which were concluded, and some are still running in terms of investigation.
Thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Members.
With regard to the contract and the monitoring of contracts to ensure value for money also, what we do at the end of the contract, there's a questionnaire that I normally send to project managers to complete whether the service was satisfactory. So there's a questionnaire that they check whether there was value for money, whether the department has actually gained something out of the contract. So that is part and parcel of the conclusion of the contract. So all my contracts will have that particular questionnaire and the close-out report that will then say this tender is the value for money, so that in future when we've got new contract, we also give reference to how that particular previous contractor has actually performed. If they performed well, obviously we then inform the BEC and the adjudication committee to make as for the inputs to the appointment of the new contractor.
The Bojanala project, is that now it's been developed? Is it still ongoing? And if it is, at some stage, according to the AG, the terms of reference are not clear, and there were no specific deliverables to indicate the number of publications. I mean, have all these things been sorted out moving forward?
Thank you, Chair. Since the split allows that the contract, that specific contract, has come to an end, we have actually moved away as environmental affairs from the Bojanala title. We now have an environmental quarterly, which specifies also in terms of the publication that it's quarterly, and there is a whole new tender process around that. So that matter has been closed, and we are now in a clean, very detailed, specific to the quality of paper of printing is specified in the new tender procedure that we have.
Chair, a serious concern for this committee, I think, is the capacity or the lack of capacity within a department to manage its financial affairs. And the next section here deals with that, where you've had consultants, we've been speaking about internal audit and procedures, because I think the basics of the AG's report findings in your department, not necessarily here, but in the department, would be lack of internal processes and internal audit and financial. What is the position at the moment? Because you've had a consultant appointed at about 1 million rand per annum for many, many, many years, from 1999. And then the remuneration paid from 1999 to July 2010 was almost 9.8 million. Now, what is the position at the moment with regards to you managing your financial services in-house?
Thank you, Chair and honourable members. I can confirm that there is that internal capacity that has been built over years, taking from that or it is building on the finding that the AG has referred to in that case, and now we have internal capacity that actually causes more than 3.5 million per annum compared to a million per annum that we were paying at the time. But I can confirm that we have internal people appointed to undertake the work internally in the organization, including the appointment of the CFO, because at that time also we did not have a new financial officer. And that contract was also approved appropriately initially through a secondment approved by DPSA and concurred by National Treasury, as well as in the last part where there was the contract that was just approved by the DG. So that has been resolved in the internal capacity. Thank you.
DG, are you satisfied that the previous consultants, in terms of skills transfer, did that take place?
Certainly, in this case, I can confirm that, Chair. And hence, even our audit as a department, it's not just my time that we've had clean audits as a department. We actually received a lot of value from that, and there was a transfer of skills. And the system of tracking projects, even project management and accounting for projects, was set up through that involvement of that service provider. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. So you're leaving a satisfied DG that as far as the finances are concerned, it's in good hands now within the department. Sorry?
that, and I can confirm that, honorable member.
Thank you. I believe me, I can go down to know that finances are under control. Now, I'm going to move on to the next item here. My hour is almost up. Assistance for the backlog and approval of waste disposal sites, where the AG view is that this contract cost of $4.5 million could have been minimized or avoided. What would your view be, DG, on this one? Thank you.
At least the AG knows that I differ with them on this view. Honorable members and chair, the waste services function is not a national competence, it's a local government and provincial competence. However, because of government, in terms of the approved program of action of government, we have been asked to actually help in local government. And that meant that we needed to have capacity to both deal with the backlogs. Most of the landfill sites, or what is understood to be disposal sites, are not permitted in the country. And municipalities, in terms of procedure, they are supposed to first submit an application to the province for the whole investigation and appoint a consultant to undertake an environmental assessment. Municipalities do not have the budget. In some instances, they don't even have the capacity internally. So we first did a study as a department. After that study, we realized that even the submission of an application requires hand-holding. So that function, we are continuing now. That's why I was saying to the AG, this is not a once-off. We, until we finish all the municipalities, every time we appoint consultants to help us in this project of landfill site authorizations. And some of them have to be closed because they are also in themselves already polluting water resources. They were badly placed, so we have to facilitate a whole rehabilitation process and help the municipality to find a suitable site, and that site then gets permitted. So that is
the
area.
Who gets the permit? Is it you or the
No, province? It's the province. The province issues the permit, so we then support and have the consultants filling the applications, doing the conducting the environmental impact assessment, and then get the province to make the decision on that basis.
The cost of that is about $380,000 a month, the cost of that consultant.
Yes, and it continues to be like that.
Good.
Until when?
How many? Okay, sorry, I don't have the numbers now. The landfill sites that still have to be permitted. I think the COO does have.
Thank you, Chair, honourable members. I think the unfortunate title here is what caused the confusion, because the backlog in licensing seems that the project was about issuing the licenses, which we would not be doing. It was in facilitating the ability to get the licenses. We have dealt with 56 applications in this year, or 56 landfills in this past financial year, and there is still 187 unlicensed landfill sites for which we need to facilitate the ability to be licensed, and that is spread over the next 2 years, where they would be facilitating those applications to be submitted to the relevant provinces for them to get the authorization of those licenses. It was in total 256 when we done the study, and we're working them up based on the legislative requirements. So once we could deal with quickly the 56 was once there was a limited process required. The one that we are doing over the next 2 years is actually going to cost more, because it's detailed investigations that are necessary into geology, into groundwater, into there's a whole lot of specialized work that needs to be done before the license can be issued. So the cost is going to be higher over the next 2 years associated with that.
Internal capacity is not available for this kind of work to be done?
It cannot be done by internal capacity, because it is not, we issue the license. So we cannot prepare, government, national and provincial government. So we cannot be preparing the application and issue the license. The information, the application is prepared by the applicant, and that is what we are assisting with, so that the province can issue the license. So it is one of the areas that we saw. We look at our criteria for utilizing consultants when we're doing this type of out of mandate but support function. It's one of the criteria where we said we will always outsource that work because it is not the core function of the department to do that. It's facilitating waste management in these
core responsibility.
Municipalities is responsible for that, for conduct, but they will also outsource it because it is the, it's a legal requirement that an independent environmental expert must compile that information that is being taken into consideration by the decision maker.
Are they likely to ever have the capacity to do it? All right, that's fine.
Leave that one
around. I'm just saying, yes, the law says that, and we pass the law, and I'm not sure what we're thinking when we say these municipalities must do this. And yet at a practical level, it's clear that and if you look at and what the AG is saying, following the logic of that law, was make the software available to them, let them develop internal capacity. But reality is that you still have to enroll as a national department. So, but anyway, we'll see.
Thank you, Chairperson. DG, there's nothing wrong with CPPs. I mean, it's all governments around the world.
Just a minute.
Sorry, Honourable Chair, for your time. I know that you want to move to the next issue. But just to say that an additional issue, for Honourable Members to note something that it's not quite a digression, but it's linked to this matter as information. The 100 and whatever, many, many, many landfill sites that are unlicensed. What it literally means is that there's dumping taking place without control and management. So for that to be licensed, there needs to be control. That doesn't, however, mean that that would be ideally the site and the area where you are continuously going into the future. If you want to have good environmental management, to have such sites taking place. For instance, there's a thinking that we should move towards regional landfill sites, if you like, into the future, so that you have lesser land use. So that in, if not that the case that in every community where you have a community, there should be a landfill site, if you like, so that we can actually push towards what the developed countries already have right now. So even as we complete that function, licensing all these others, I just thought that we should leave it with the information for honorable members that there is still that work that's going to be done going forward. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Minister, for that. On the PPP, I was just saying there's nothing wrong with PPPs. But it was, and I think I read somewhere the other day that the department is moving into some new building somewhere. So that's the end product of what started in 2006 with your transaction advisor. But something, from reading this, something doesn't seem to be right in the appointment of that transaction advisor. It wasn't the best person according to the bid points. The person lacks skills. What is the background to this kind of thing? Because, and what impact is this decision here of 2007 having now as you move forward?
Chair, let me just confirm first that the finding of the AG is that the department did not appoint the highest point bidder. There are two things in terms of price and technical expertise. The company scored higher on technical, but not, it was not the cheapest. But secondly, I think the department decided then to appoint the highest technical scorer in terms of the bidding process, which is a deviation. And the key there is how we set thresholds for technical, technical capability. So this is where I think in future we then say that where we know that we cannot fail, we want a project of a building which has to be as innovative as what we want at the Department of Environmental Affairs,
we should have set our technical specification to about 7% or whatever, but maybe we set a little bit lower. So the service provider that was appointed was the most technical, that the scoring is they scored high. But in terms of points, when you then combine them with the price, they were then the lowest. They were not the lowest, they were not highest bidder. They were then the second highest on the base of price. So then secondly, I think from where we are now, in my own assessment, we made the correct decision. And the process of finalizing the awarding was concluded early this year, and then the construction started, late last year, and the construction has started. What happened in terms of capability of the service provider, yes, we had to add, because the department made changes on the specification. We had certain energy efficiency levels that we wanted at the time, but then later on we realized that for such buildings also there is an accreditation or certification, which we did not have at the time, that we introduced in the process. That's where we then had a bit of variation in respect to that appointment. But otherwise, we do not regret. The value for money aspect were not compromised either.
Public works are involved in this in any way? Because normally public works are the custodians and caretakers and landowners and renters and everything else.
Yes, honourable members, there is a long history to the department's building. There was a process where public works was involved, treasurer was involved, and ourselves. And initially we thought that public works was going to build. But then in terms of what they call supply chain versus PPP, at the time of doing the feasibility, initially, then this process was found to be the most cost-effective, the PPP route, and even on in terms of affordability, that was then the preferred route, in the meeting where Public Works also was involved in the process initially.
There are some deficiencies that have been identified here in terms of awarding this contract to the consultant. For example, it was not based on the criteria as set out in the terms of reference. Department did not appoint the National Treasury PPP Unit Project Advisor as a voting member, which it should have done. What Treasury's response to all of this? And maybe your response first, EG, and then Treasury.
Fortunately, at the time, Chair, Treasury participates in the committee. Treasury chose not to actually be involved in the actual scoring. And what I understand is that we were supposed, the accounting officer then should have appointed them as an air voting member. But they are the custodian of the PPP guideline. They were there. They should have been able to object. Because that you move from step one to step two and you get a treasury approval. The treasury approval, 1, TA1, TA2, TA3, basically because they understood the process. But Treasury never actually accept when you are in trouble to say, well, we should not have done it in this way. But they were part of the process, so they did not then do the voting.
Thank you, Jay. Even though this is not not from that unit, as the data indicated, if the Treasury approval 1, 2, and 3 was granted, then Treasury would have accepted that the process was run in a proper manner, despite the whiting of the different areas and the lack of compliance with the EE status.
The EE was complied with. I don't know where that comes from, Chair, sorry. Just to say that, in fact, this is the first EE transaction advisors in the construction of the government PPP. It's one of the first, as far as I'm informed.
Then you don't agree with the AGS said, is it? They say the evaluation of bids by bid evaluation committee was not based on the BEE criteria as set out in the terms of reference communicated to the bidders. So maybe the bidders didn't know that this is going to be the criteria. I think that's what they're trying to say. AG?
Maybe that is the part that I can say I agree then. If
if there was a difference in essence. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I think she nodded. The last section is the smallest amount that's involved. But here again, competitive bidding process has not followed. Small amount, 264,000. Background to that.
Chair, can I quickly indicate that 2010 was a project that was led by other departments, and the LOC was responsible for doing the environmental framework in terms of reducing both the carbon footprint and other aspects of conservation, water conservation, and even waste management in terms of hosting 2010. The department was then pulled in at the 11th hour when that was not in place, and therefore had to then make a decision and for choice services in order to put in place the guideline for greening 2010. And basically that was what was done. That's the reason why then there was not a competitive bidding for that service, which amounted to 200 and something thousand. So that's what I have in the background documentation. Thanks, honourable member.
Yeah, Chairperson, on comments, thanks, sir. On the comment from the department, I mean, in the first one you say that the appointments of consultants and material and the process has been addressed by the responsible officials and the chairperson of the departmental bid adjudication committee. Maybe you can furnish us with the memorandum or the internal memorandum or whatever process is being used now with regard to that. So because my question was, yeah, how? You know, how have you done this? And then on the, you will instruct managers to link milestones. I mean, they should have been instructed some time ago, and have they been instructed, and what kind of instruction they have been given. So I think those are the two things that in your comments, that one needs to be satisfied moving forward, that interventions, appropriate interventions have been put in place, so we don't have a recurrence of what has been reported by the AG.
I will provide that, Chair and Lord Member. Thank you.
Can we get all the things we have requested in a week's time? Next week sometime, so we can call for the week. All right.
Thank you very much. I'll sit until colleagues have follow-up questions.
Okay, comrades, any follow-ups? Comrade Shulwan.
Thank you, Professor. Honorable Singh has requested everything, but I just want to ask one question in, I think two questions in relation with the, especially in the adjudication committees of the department in relation with this consultant, to check if there was any official who was charged in terms of not following proper procedures in all the appointments which were not properly adhered to. And maybe the second one is on the consultant contracts which were awarded to the assistance of the financial services, which took almost 10 to 11 years, to check maybe if there were some penalties issued to the consultant because there were no skill transfer in terms of the agreement. Thank you.
Just to check on that one. The page 51.
Thank you.
Chair, honorable members, I have no charges to officials that were involved in the adjudication committee. Because the officials, I mean, there was no unlawful activities undertaken. All of these were done in accordance with the prescripts. If I refer to the earlier discussion on the variation and reprioritization of budgets, those are allowed in terms of the law. So there was no wrongdoing. And also, as I indicated on the one of the consultant that was appointed for a long time, there were approvals in place, both from the Department of Public Service and Administration, because it's in terms of 16.2
exception of the Public Service Act that those settlements were undertaken. However, the weakness was the issue that the contract, the agreement or the appointment did not specify the transfer of skills. And that happened without it being specified in the contract, but there is proof in terms of the transfer of skills that that materialized in terms of that contract. So therefore, there were no penalties in that regard. Thank you.
All right. I think we're almost at the end of the process. I have to check on page 54. The mechanism of monitoring closeout reports, the issue of questionnaires. Is that the only way by which you are able to get the information from project managers? The questionnaires that must be completed by project managers, that would enable you, you know, to take proper decisions in relation to fish procurement.
Chairperson, we also use the service level agreement because that those service level agreement has got also deliverables linked to time. So if say the appointed service provider does not actually comply in terms of the service level agreement, the project manager will then raise the matter and we will then go to legal services informing, you know, him or her legally, to say you are transgressing this particular clause in the service level.
I understand. I'm looking at the questionnaire from your project manager. Those become your whole basis of confirming that there was indeed a lawful man or not.
Yes. For now, we are using the closeout report and the questionnaire. And that information is actually passed over in future evaluations of tenders. If the same service providers is then involved, we can then inform them better to say how they have actually performed previously so that when they do the evaluation, they can make a decision.
All right. Okay. DJ, you wanted to make an addition?
Yes, I wanted to make an addition, Chair, that we have been in the organization thinking about, we have an intranet-based system that we were developing, so that even other line managers can see how we control and manage projects. And some of the aspects relate to how you even arrive at the process of listing service providers. But again, the legal prescript for blacklisting service providers is more a national treasury prescript, not generated by the department. But we are in a position to then indicate the performance of a service provider in respect to any agreement.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm sitting here, I'm thinking, before we even ask you that, what is this project management that's involved in this? And you know what I want to say.
Okay. I think a follow-up, I'll amplify complete minute. The issue of relying on questionnaires from project managers. I think the question is on the risks entailed. Where in our other engagements with our department, find that the project managers approved projects have been completed, everything in place, only to find that when you do physical inspection, you find that a lot leaves to be desired. So if there is no supplementary mechanism of confirming that indeed there has been value for money, we only rely on papers that are sent to us in the office, it does carry the risk of certain projects being passed on whilst they are actually deficient.
Confirm, Chair, honourable members, that we do have quality assurance systems in place in the department, and they vary from types of projects. In the case of, for instance, the building, this PPP, we have the whole independent quality assurance system that would then confirm. And to even with those line managers, they have supervisors in most of the cases. It might be the director or the chief director that is involved with the project, but finally the sign off is with the DDG. So we do have checks and balances, and also the internal audit function in terms of our intervention plan now. We use the internal audit to actually go and test in some of the other areas of delivery, because we are now into performance auditing in government, and part of our readiness as a department had to be ensured by using internal audit to actually verify some of the deliverables. And I'm not saying that we are 100% there, but this is where we are continuously improving as an organization.
No, that's fine. So just to mitigate all those potential risks of having documentation in the office, which might not be in line. As they say, trust is good, control is better. But yeah, DG, thanks very much. I'm not sure, Minister, if there's anything out of this discussion that you may feel you need to talk to that might not have been cleared. Okay. All right, DG and your officials, we thank you very much and continue to thank you for your clean audit. And one example that say, let's move to, you know, performance audit, value for money, beyond mere compliance with procedure. Want you to remain there. Don't do a limit one step forward, two steps back. You know, just hold it out there. We're happy with how the department manages its finances as reported by the auditor general. So that is far and far. All right, we'll immediately hand over to Comrade Roy to deal with what happened.
Chair, Minister, thank you very much. I'm going to be dealing with Board Affairs, which is from page 87 of the Auditor General's report to page 99 of the report. Chair, I think that Mr. Singh, when he dealt with Environmental Affairs, established that a lack of planning in that department is leading to a dependence on consultants. I think the same picture emerges if you read this report on water affairs. A lack of planning is leading to an overemphasis on the use of consultants. Of all the departments we've had, and I think this is the eighth now, if I'm right, the eighth, water affairs after defense spends the second highest amount on consultants. Page 87 of the report, well over 4 billion rand on consultants during this period. Of all the eight, the other seven departments we've had, including environmental affairs, water affairs has the highest vacancy rate. And so I want to start my very first question, Chair, regarding the vacancy rate, the lack of permanent staff in the department. This is dealt with by the AG on page 87. Of his report. He indicates that over this period from 2009, there's a 30.7% average vacancy rate. But the averaging disguises the fact that there has been over this period, over the years in this report, a regular annual increase in the vacancy rate in the department. If you look on page 88 of the report, vacancy rate from 20% to 27% to 46%. And so my first question relates to current vacancy rates in the department, because I believe there's a correlation between lack of internal capacity on staff and then the dependence on consultants. Now, the Minister was asked the question, I think it was in December 2011, when she indicated, December 2011, in the National Assembly, she indicated that there were 49 senior management positions vacant at that point. So my question is now, one, what is the overall vacancy rate now in the department, number generally, number one. Number two, what is the vacancy rate at senior management level?
Chairperson, honourable members, thank you very much. The vacancy rate as of December 2012 in the department is sitting at 10.75%. So our total establishment in terms of funded posts is 7,890, and our vacancies at that time is 848. With regard to your comment around the use over-reliance on the...
Just hang on, and sorry, that's the overall 10.7% and senior management level?
I just want to pull up that figure quickly, if I could, Honourable Chair. I didn't anticipate you going into that level. I just want to pull up my personal management report, if I could.
Or just give a general, it needn't be absolutely specific, you can give us the specifics later on, but has there been a decrease from the 49 reported in 2010?
Chair, through a process which Minister initiated in 2011, where we put in place a business process re-engineering initiative in the department, one of the elements of that EPRC process was to deal with the high level vacancies in SMS level, and we've made significant progress in terms of the filling of those vacancies. And I can certainly, Honourable Chair members, provide you with a list of the posts which have been dealt with through that process where we've filled posts. We are currently dealing with the final recruitment processes at a second line manager level, the DDG level, where recruitment processes are being brought to a conclusion on four DDGs in the department, which are then, the next step is be subjected to the cabinet approval process. But all of the other recruitment has been concluded up to this point in time.
As in environmental affairs, is very good news. Down to 10.7% from 46%. As a result, has there been then a reduction, possibly, in the use of consultants?
Indeed, Honourable Chair members, when you look at the AG's report, which indicated a 4.2 billion rand consultancy fees over a three-year period, which if you average that out, and it's an extrapolated figure, 1.4 billion per year, in terms of the 2011-12 period, that's reduced in the amount of 647 million. So there has been a reduction in the use of consultants. We will, however, Honourable Chair members, not get to a point where we don't rely on the use of consultants. There are certain specialised activities which we will not be able to build the capacity internally. Some of those skills reside up there in the private sector, but there is certainly a downward trend in the value spent on consultants.
I don't think you'd expect any department to do it away entirely with consultants. Our specialist skills that are required for 1 month, 2 months, maybe a year, which do not require permanent staff establishment. But our concern in this report was that your core functions, that you find that 64% of your consultancy project went to core services. That was our main concern. Not the specialists that you occasionally need, but the absolutely heart and kernel of the department, the core services. Can you give us the assurances there that those core services are not being outsourced and that you now have stronger permanent establishment in the department?
Honourable Chair members, indeed I can confirm. Those core functions which were contracted out at the time, at the point in time, essentially, when you look at the assignments that were considered by the Auditor General, related to the process of the implementation of the SAP ERP system on the trading account, those contracts have drawn to a conclusion, and much of that work is being done internally through the departmental staff, albeit that through our IT services, we still do need to contract our SAP support services, which is some specialist support, which comes in to assist us on the management of the SAP ERP system. The other aspect, Honourable Chair members, which has taken place since this audit, is that at the time that this audit was conducted, we had the main account and the water trading account under the management of a single chief financial officer. In 2011, this function was split, where we've created two separate financial components, one dealing with the main account with its own chief financial officer, and a component dealing with the water trading entity with its own chief financial officer. We had up until, up to now, we still have an acting CFO for the trading account, and the thing of that particular post is one of the four DVGs which I made reference to, which is being taken to conclusion at the moment. And we are obviously, while we're not a perfect Honourable Chair members at this stage in terms of the capacity we require, we are building that capacity within the water trading entity as well.
Chair, I want to move on to the next point dealt with in the report on page 89. That is the extension of contracts. Let me be quite blunt in my question. Has the department been abusing the extension of contracts by means of variation orders? I use the word abuse. It is the word used in a circular by the Accountant General. In fact, the Accountant General speaks of cost abuse of variation orders. Now, if you look at the AG's report on page 90, 14 of the 25 contracts he examined were subject to a total of 46 variation orders, amounting to over 500 million rand. So I ask this question, in the light of your assurance at the end of this report, in your statement at the end of this report, you give the assurance that these variation orders have all been done in terms of procurement procedures. But I ask, has there not been abuse of the application of variation orders in water affairs?
Chair, honourable members, I wouldn't use the word abuse. There has been an excessive use of variation orders in those tenders as identified by the Auditor General. We have, however, taken steps to make sure that that doesn't indeed happen. If you look at the documentation which the Auditor General had available to them at the time, all of those variation orders were in fact dealt with in terms of the departmental delegations at the time. There were only four cases to a value of 16.2 million, which constituted irregular expenditure, and those were in fact reported in our annual report on the financial statements of the water trading entity. But in terms of the guidelines or the processes we've now put in place for dealing with contracts going forward, you certainly won't see the excessive use or application of variation orders as you saw during that particular period of review by the Auditor General.
You see, we're dealing with that period, not what is, I'm coming to the current situation, I will ask that question. But we are dealing with what the Auditor General found during the period of his investigation. And let me give you just one example on page 90. Item number 2 there on page 90. Surely that is an abuse. As I said, the word is used by the Accountant General, not specific to this department, but to the general use of variation orders. Look at that. An increase in over 1,253% from an original contract value of over 6 million to eventual final contract amount of 94 million. Well over a 1,000% increase. That is not excessive. That to me is abuse.
Chair, I'm still going to use my term of excessive use, if you don't mind.
No, that's fine.
I'm just trying to make a point.
I accept the points, Chair, and if you look at that particular contract that related to the SAP implementation and the procurement of power users on the implementation of SAP, and at the time of procuring those services, we thought that we would, or had anticipated, that we would be able to procure staff to be able to be appointed on the departmental establishment to perform those functions. That indeed didn't happen at the time, and that's what resulted.
Why did it not happen? Why was staff not appointed?
Chair, we didn't have a adequately structured finance unit for the trading entity at the time. And that's why I made reference to Honourable Ainsley's question earlier on to say we now have two separate finance units in the department under their own CFO. One of the other aspects which related to the use of...
that statement is... Well, maybe other comrades have understood you. You say when you, the original contract was entered into, the anticipation was that permanent staff was going to be appointed. And only after you went into the contract, then you realized, no, we don't have a properly structured finance unit within the water trading entity.
And at the very least, that shows an absolute lack of planning. And that's what I see throughout this page. And this is only a sample, as Mr. Singh pointed out earlier on, Chair. We're dealing now with a sample. Increases of 847%, increases of 860%, increases of 330%. Now, this is a sample. You know, there are numerous other contracts where one could have increases even in excess of 1,200. It seems to me, Chair, that the department has not relied on proper planning, but has fallen back on the ability to use variation orders to fill the gap in a lack of planning. That's a comment. I don't know if I want to, if you want to, that's my comment, if you want to.
No, I want you to move
on. I want to move on, Chair. This hopefully has been put a stop to. Now, what the Accountant General calls an abuse, by a circular which I'm sure you have received from the, signed by the Accountant General, dated 31st of May 2011, dealing with these extensions or these variations. Very specific there, I'm sure you've seen the circular, very specific, item 3.93 says, and it says there, we are talking about a gross abuse of the current SCM system in relation to variation orders. He says, henceforward, contracts may be expanded or varied by not more than 20% or 20 million rand in the case of work and other services, in excess up to 15% or 15 million rand for other goods and services. Now, in the light of that, the trend in this department has been the excessive use, I'll use your words, the excessive use of variation orders. How has this circular affected the way you plan in the department, given the massive increases in original contract values? What steps have you taken to implement this? How has it affected you?
Chair, Honourable Members, we indeed have taken on board that practice note issued by the Accountant General, and we have put in place a much more robust planning and appointment process. And
so you would agree then that the excessive use of consultants has been as a result of a lack of planning?
To some extent, yes.
Okay, I'm sorry I interrupted you.
So, Chair, we have put in place a rigorous or more rigorous process on the planning and appointment of PSPs. One of the first steps that are taken when we now consider the appointment of the PSPs is that that submission is first presented for scrutiny by the top management of the department to determine whether indeed a submission should go to our departmental bid adjudication committee for consideration, and the proposers of the use of those PSPs have to be able to convince top management that the skills are not available in the department and that there's indeed a need for us to contract the service out to a PSP. Top management will also scrutinize whether that particular submission fits into our demand plan, which is prepared at the beginning of the financial year. So I certainly, from where I'm sitting, do not anticipate that we are going to see variation orders, the excessive use of variation orders, as you saw during the time of the AG's report on the use of consultants.
It will be very useful to establish whether the Accountant General circular is being adhered to. If we could get perhaps a list of, I suppose this came into effect on the 31st of May, a list from the 31st of May to now as the number of consultants appointed in excess of the figures that he mentions in the circular. If we could perhaps have that, that would indicate to us whether in fact the circular is having the kind of effect you indicate that it is having on the department. Could we have that?
Honourable Chair, members, I can confirm that we can provide that information.
Tapping the Minister's hand is up.
Can we, is it possible to get it by next week?
Indeed, Chair.
Okay. All right. Come with Minister.
Honourable Chair, just to come in on this issue of planning. Let me just start by saying that it's unfortunate for some of us that the work that we're talking about is actually work that was to be accounted for and accounted for in the years that some of us were still not even in the department. And I think it's a very few of us, if not one person, along this on this desk. But I just want to talk about this issue of planning in relation to the circular. DG, SNDG earlier on indicated that in relation to the vacancy rate, that there is a process that we've embarked upon as a department. Now, I'm not talking county in general. As a department, to actually ensure that we have very few, if not limited, because it's very impossible not to have vacancies that are not filled. Very few, less than 10%, even, you know, just one digit, if possible, so that we can do away with the appointment of consultants. What used to be happening in the department back then is that if a vacancy would have been open and unfilled, it was easy to appoint a PSP, apart from those actually mentioned here, audited by the auditor. It was easy to appoint a PSP to fill in a particular post. So we've since then said that there's the post that are occupied by the PSPs and contract workers.
Professional
service provider. In other words, a professional service provider would occupy a post which is supposed to be occupied, and that's a consultant in a way who's occupying this post. So we have since said that those posts that are occupied by PSPs, now the reduction would lead to reduction of consultants. Let there be occupation by people who are appointed. And these are some of the instances where we filled in those areas and instances where there were PSPs appointed by the normal workers who are now part of the capacity of the department. That's the first thing I wanted to say, because it also does reduce that reliance on consultants. Secondly, we actually have begun a long process of, and a very thorough process of, business process re-engineering. So the question I'm really getting into is that the work that you do and the results that you see, actually, it will not just arise from the secular, because we would not sit in the department and await secular that would sort of waken us up to say, just wake up, there's something happening. So you will see a lot more happening now, including the reduction of these PSCs who were actually appointed. So the kind of response that we gave here earlier on, we said to you that 4.2 billion rand, which was coming out as an audit on the audit of use of consultants in the Auditor General report, on average it would have been 1.4 billion rand per annum. It's now down to 602 or 47 million rand per annum. just in this country. It says a lot. And therefore, that is actually something that is not only reliant on the original curricula. I'm adding that over and above that, we are doing own work internally in the department to actually reduce and manage and control the use of consultant. Of course, there will be that number that you will always have. So I just wanted to say that let's not much more rely on the secular only.
No. Thanks, Compliment Minister. I think we could only ask based on that secular, and it's incumbent on you to then fill us in with even more information so we have a broader perspective on what is happening in the department.
Now that you're going beyond the circular is very good news. Very good news, and we look forward then to the report of the result of the circular on planning in your department and the use of consultants. That will tell us what effect the circular has had on your operations. Chair, I want to move on to the next item dealt with by the AG, and that is the 5 consultants appointed to assist you in implementing the accrual-based system. You moved from a, what was it, cash-based accounting system to an accrual-based system, and for that purpose, over a period of time, you used 5 different consultants. Why 5 different consultants for what is really essentially the same project? That is, changing from one accounting system to another. Why did you feel it necessary to spread this work over 5 consultants?
Chair, that was each of those consultants appointed at different responsibilities. You correct, Honourable Chair, a member that it was at the time moving from the cash-based system, which we're using, onto an accrual-based, where we implemented SAP as our ERP system. One of the contracts related to the provision of financial managers, which we didn't have within that water trading entity, and that particular consultant delivered on the business requirements of the SAP front end, the cash management, the procurement to pay, the registration of the cash process, and that helped also develop policies around accounts payable, cash management, inventories, and revenue account receivable. Then we had a further consultant which was procured to provide the what in SAP terminology is termed the power users that we used as the actual hands that transacted on the system due to us not having our own staff. And also we're involved in the training. We set up a number of training centers in our 9 provinces. The department operates on a decentralized management basis where we've got offices in each of the provinces. So we went through a process of training own staff who were identified to move from the main account or whatever working on the cash-based system at the time into the accrual-based environment, and one of the consultants, to focus in particular, was involved in the training aspects. I must just also indicate, Chair, that we were not able to retain all of the staff that we trained. The SAP environment is an environment where you do develop and acquire a certain special skills in terms of the operation on that system, and we did lose staff to other operators who were using the same accrual system. So as we trained staff, we also did lose staff. Then there was also a consultant, a PSP, that was used in terms of dealing with the change management within the department as well. Moving from the cash-based to the accrual-based system, we had to also deal with the change management of moving staff and starting and operating in that environment. Not only with regard to the finance managers, but also the users at our various sites where procurement was taking place and the managers responsible for those units out on our construction sites. So, you know, we've got a department spread across the country, given that water is a national competence and it's not delegated to province or the municipalities. So share that in
this,
a nutshell.
This exercise cost, I think, am I right, about half a billion rand, about 500 million rand.
Correct.
For these five consultants. Yeah. Have we received value for money? You say one consultant was appointed to provide the services of a financial manager. Were skills transferred to the extent that you now have your own financial manager, or do you still rely on consultants? I was also going to relate my question to SAP power users. You've indicated you're losing those. What about super users? You have your own. Check your auto Google. I advise you to Google some of these concepts. SAP power users.
Super users.
SAP super users. Very interesting IT terminology. But my question is, have we received value for money? As a result of the half a billion, do you now have your own internal staff, your own internal capacity? One. And two, the fact that the department is still receiving qualified audit opinions and a host of emphases of matters. Am I wrong in relating that and saying, well, why have we spent, what have we spent all this money on if we are still being qualified and we still have a host of emphases of matters? If you can, my question is related to those two bits, one, internal capacity, and two, the continuation of qualifications. Are we getting value for money?
Chair, I believe that over time we did get value for money. We have, however, lost staff over that period of time as well. So some of the staff that were trained, which one would be able to refer to and identify as part of the value for money, you do lose them through, I suppose I could use the word natural attrition if they resign from the department. You also need to bear in mind, Chair, I think, of the magnitude of the account that we are managing through the water trading entity. The water trading entity is an account in the order of 8 billion this year. Yeah. 8 billion this year. Yeah. So it's a substantial account. We do have capacity in-house at the moment, but I had to indicate in one of my earlier statements that we still need to use some staff support into the department. We don't have 100% capacity. I indicated what our vacancy rate is. Ideally, we would want to be at 100% of all of our vacancies filled, but we aren't at that level. We're still at a 10% vacancy level. So there will still be deficiencies within those units. Chair, the issue of which honourable member makes around the poor audit outcome. We do have an action plan in place in terms of targeting a clean audit by 2014. So that is part of the work that is in place as well.
Next year.
For the
clean audit.
Yeah,
the
2014-15 audit. We're expecting to have a clean audit. Yes. We won't have it on the 13-14 year yet. We would hope to, but our target is the 2014.
I want to deal with fixed assets, page 94, I think. Page 94 of the 80s report. And again, I want to ask the question I've just asked. Has the department received value for money? Over 77 million rand spent on four consultancy contracts to assist fixed asset unit. Now yet, in 2009, after expenditure of this money, in 2009-2010, the department received a qualified audit opinion based in part on fixed assets. In 2011-2012, it again received a qualified audit opinion based on fixed assets. Here we have just spent 77 million rand on consultants to assist us with a fixed asset unit. So what are they achieving? What is our money doing for us? If you are still being qualified
again and again on assets. Where is this money getting us?
Chair, I do believe once again in response to the honourable member that we have had value for money. We don't have a perfect asset register in place, but we at least have a much better handle on our total assets, and the assets which the water trading entity in particular manages is an asset base in the order of 110 billion. I've got the right figure right there. Yeah, 110 billion. And the processes that were put in place at that time to identify those assets are assets that are stretched across the entire country, including dams, pipelines, reservoirs, canals, weirs on our rivers, and we've had to go out and verify all of those assets physically. But I will ask my acting CFO just to make reference to the work that they're doing in terms of working forward to getting a keen opinion on the assets going forward as well. They've got an action plan in place, and I would just ask my acting CFO if it's in order with you, Chair, just to make an input there as well.
If you would do that, because I disagree with you. 77 million rand spent on consultants to assist in the fixed asset register unit. But still, again and again, and now again I believe, you are qualified on assets. I don't think that's value for money. But maybe we can have a different response from your CFO.
If I could just ask Ms. Moffat King just to touch on the asset issue. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I think on the point of the qualification for 2011 and 12. The big asset was not a qualification. What were the major issues for that year was revenue as well as the other irregular expenditure.
Yeah, I think I read the report yesterday. You're pretty proud of assets. But anyway.
Okay.
Which report? Report did you read?
Annual report.
Annual report.
Maybe you're talking about maybe...
Yeah, it's 2011-2012.
Oh, okay. Carry on.
But which actually makes it worse? They were not qualified on assets that year, and the last one qualified, so it actually means whatever good work had been done by that.
So, Chair, let me just distinguish. There is two in the report. There are always going to be two audit opinions.
One for
water trading,
the other one.
And for main account. For main account last year, there was issues of assets, not for trading, water trading.
Okay.
So that's what I'm responding
to. Well, we're talking about cost purposes. I'm talking about the main account.
Okay, that's fine.
To clarify, the consultants that were used were subjected to the Auditor General's report. The consultants related to the water trading
entity. Water trading entity.
Not
to the main account.
No. So the water trading entity has been registered now. Okay.
And that's what those consultants were writing about.
Yeah, sure. But you were done.
So, okay. Chair, you know, my contention is still that we had value for money out of those...
Yeah, no. I think that one is cleared to the extent that it relates to the water trading entity.
As opposed to the main account.
As opposed to the main account. And the asset register for the water trading entity is fine. Okay.
Chair, more recently, two individual consultants were appointed to assist the fixed asset unit again, during the period 2009 to 2012. Why two individual consultants? Why two different consultants? When the department appointed two consultants in 2006, they came up with two different asset registers. I'm surprised the department did not learn its mistakes then, but again appointed two individual consultants to do essentially the same work. Why is that? Can you explain that?
Chair, they weren't, if I could just indicate, those consultants weren't appointed to do the same work. They were appointed in terms of Section 15.2 of the PSA, Public Service Act, in that they were seconded to the department in a similar way that my colleague from dear Environment Affairs responded early on, and we did that with the concurrence of National Treasury. The one consultant was appointed initially to handle some of the reporting and audit work within our part and in our division, our branch, regional coordination, where in terms of donor funding under our Mr. Bambane program, we were required to also prepare separate reports on the donor funded programs. And that particular seconded official was working on the donor funded funded program. In the latter part of the contract, in the last year and a half of that official contract, he was also appointed as acting CFO for the water trading entity. That contract subsequently terminated on the 31st of March. The issue of the second contract, contractor, that was a much shorter assignment which was providing some support to the chief financial officer in the main account. While that consultant was in place, we did also assign a dedicated project manager who was responsible for the contract management as well as ensuring that capacity was built during that duration of the assignment. And we did have a closeout report. Reports were submitted on a monthly basis, and there's a closeout report which was submitted. And in terms of capacity that has been built in the CFO main accounts office, we haven't required to bring additional resources in to support the CFO in that regard.
Okay. Here on page 96, the report deals with, again, two consultancy contracts awarded to assist in the water trading entity. Page 96. Now, again, am I seeing duplication when no duplication exists? Again, why two service providers? Because if I read this report on page 96, they were both dealing with essentially the same work. Both dealt with billing operations. Both dealt with accounts administration. The one in the prior year, the one in the subsequent year. Was that not a duplication of effort there? The first one had a cost of over 49 million rand, the second over 47 million rand. But for me, you must disabuse me, to do essentially the same work. Billing operations, accounts administration. How do two contracts differ?
In terms of the two contracts you're referring to, I just want to go to
page 96. The water trading account.
Yeah.
The two consultants appointed to assist water trading. You can see they both were dealing with billing operations, both for account administration.
Yeah, correct.
But the first consultant not, do he work effectively, had to be then corrected by a second one. I don't understand how that happened. Although the second, I'm aware that the second consultant,
yes,
in addition to doing the billing operation, in addition to doing account administration, again as a result of lack of planning, then was given a host of other things to do. I'm aware of that. But why both dealing with billing and both dealing with account administration?
Okay. Chair, what I'm going to do, if you don't mind, I'm going to ask one of my colleagues, the DDG responsible for the infrastructure branch, just to assist me with an input on those two particular contracts. And then I will come in. I've just got a comment to make in particular around the contract for Cyrus Kunana, if I could.
Which colleague of yours?
I have a question.
One to the left, one to the left, yeah.
Don't anticipate me. I have a question on that contract.
I wasn't trying to anticipate.
It's a shared contract. I have a question.
Yeah.
Fine. No, it's okay.
Chair, I wasn't anticipating if the honourable member linked the two contracts and asked a question around both of them.
No, it's fine. I mean, if you had anticipated it, but it's okay.
If you look at the first contract, which is the IQ Business Group contract, it started in 2007, ended up in December 2008.
Yeah.
That contract came immediately after the establishment of the entity. There were no policies, processes. As you remember, the DG has indicated that it was like we're establishing a new business. We needed new policies, accrual-based policies, accrual-based processes that were then fed into the implementation of the SEB development project. Subsequent to the completion of the policies and processes, we then needed support in terms of now implementing those processes, rolling them out to our cluster offices and regional offices, making sure that now that those processes that were developed are now rolled out and are used and effectively in the provinces.
So there's no duplication of the first contractor dealing with billing and also the second one, and the first contractor dealing with account administration and also the second one dealing with the same item. There's no duplication there.
There's no duplication if you look at the whole chain of the process, because the protocol starts with establishing policies and processes. Then you then move to the next phase where you then implement those policies and processes. So the other one developed, established them, and they were then approved. And if you look at the financial year under which this contract was running, it was the financial year that the WTE for the first time received an unqualified audit report, because we had a thin asset base and we had policies and processes that, of which AG had been complaining about. But then, now the challenge was to make sure now that those processes and policies were being implemented effectively on the ground. That's when we then needed support in terms of hands that are going to assist us to work with our people on the ground, making sure that those policies and processes are absorbed effectively.
The second consultant that was appointed, am I correct, is that the Sirius Quinana and Associates? Is that the second acting DG?
That is the one I thought you were referring to,
that,
yes.
That is the successful contractor there. Now, as I said earlier on, the second consultant chair was given a range of additional tasks to do. One of the things outside the initial scope of the contract, one of the additional things he was given to do was to perform a forensic investigation into fixed assets. Yet the same consultant had previously provided the department with fixed asset experts. So do you not see here an absolute conflict in a consultant being appointed to investigate his own work? It's bizarre. We've had cases before in this committee where consultants have been appointed to manage consultants. This is the first case I've come across. If I'm correct, correct me if I'm wrong, where a consultant is being appointed to undertake a forensic investigation into, at least in part, work he's already performed. Is that the comment you wanted to make earlier on that concept?
I have a different comment, which I'll still make, Chairperson and Honourable Member, but I'll just ask Namata just to come in again and just refer to that work done by Sirius Quinana.
Chair, on the first appointment of Quinana on fixed assets, it was then again when we did not have an asset register and they were brought in to assist us in putting up that asset register, putting up the systems and loading everything into the system. The subsequent appointment under the second appointment, which is the Sirius Quinana and Associate appointment, that was meant specifically for a certain incident that has taken place in one of our sites in Lubumbu around a loss of equipment that was taking place in that particular area. We then commissioned the forensic to look at those assets that were lost.
That is my question. You appoint a consultant, provide fixed asset experts. Then you appoint the same person to investigate fixed assets. And is there not a conflict? I don't care if it was this part of the problem or that part of the problem. Sure, there's a conflict.
I would not see it as a conflict.
Yeah, then we have a difference of opinion, and I think it's a conflict. But maybe we'll move on then. I don't know.
Please let me explain. As you are saying, there's no conflict of interest. Can you elaborate a bit?
There must not only not be a conflict of interest, there must be an apparent to the public. No apparent possible conflict of interest.
Alright, no, that's fine.
Also
okay.
Perception.
Yes.
No, that's fine. Can you...
The nature of the allegation and the report that was before the department, that led to the department having to make that decision, was of such a nature that it was internal people that were alleged to have been involved in that. Now, it would not be a conflict in the case where now Sirius is on board and they are doing this investigation. And it actually, I think, it even worked for the benefit of the department in the sense that there are people who even knew how this asset base is structured in the said case because they were involved in the structuring of the asset register. So they even knew the nitty-gritties around how those assets were holded and so forth. And I think it also led to a successful a prosecution of some of the people that were involved, and some have since left the department. But it was this that they were running away from that particular thing, and there are mechanisms that are being put in place to try and recover some of the money there.
Mechanisms that you are trying to put in place, you sound futuristic.
There are mechanisms that we are putting, they are in place, but the process is still at the moment where there is paperwork going on between the state attorney and the department in terms of covering
it. Is this the company, this Sirius Banana and Associates, is that the company partly owned by the former DG of Public Works?
Chair, I do not know the members of the ownership of the company, but I'm getting nods from both my CFO and my head of the branch that indeed so.
Now, I have another question then related to that contract. If that is the case, then why did the department not see a very real possibility of a conflict of interest in the awarding of this contract when the chief director for financial management of Water Trading Works actually worked under the former DG of Public Works, Mr. Shesley, Ms. Angele Mate? He was chairperson of the tender board that awarded this contract. Did the department not concern itself about possible conflict of interest in the chairperson of the tender board awarding a contract to somebody that she had a very close association with? Was there no concern at that time? I know the current people, Chair, answering questions were not there at the time, but institutional memory perhaps would indicate to us at the time were there not concerns expressed of a possible conflict of interest.
Well, Ms. Martin is here.
Chair, from where I'm sitting as acting DG, I was not aware of any issues raised around a possible conflict of interest at the time that contract was awarded.
Yeah, no, he's not saying that there were issues of conflict of interest that were raised. He is raising it now, saying, looking back in retrospect, was that appropriate?
Again, we're looking at perceptions, you know.
Chair, sitting where I am, I was not aware of that relationship of the two individuals at Public Works, so my answer still stands.
Okay.
I am not aware of any conflict of interest in that particular tender.
Chair, I want to move on to... May I move on?
Yes, completely.
Again, Honourable Chair, it really would worry me to leave a matter of this nature where we allege that there was perception of conflict of interest. It would require that we actually probe that matter to finality and to conclusion. Because it's important to establish, even though the thing has passed, I don't know what we can do now, or what some of us should have done when we were not even present, but should have done. Going forward, it's important to say, if Ms. Zandile Matesi, she can tell us. Because I'd really like us to clear that perception. Going back to the department, should we investigate this matter, or is it something that was a perception? And that perception that has been cleared. Because I really wouldn't like to go with hanging issues back to the department.
Two things, Comrade Minister. I think the concern you're raising about being able to explain the rationale of decisions taken when people are not physically there is the frustration that, as a committee, we experience with many government departments, where because of this continuous turnover of leadership, we are always faced with officials who were not there. And I think of all the hearings that we've had since last year, if I recall, or even since this January, we find that there are less than three or four departments where officials said we're there. We can account for all these things that have happened. Which has the possibility of even rendering our work relevant, because we're calling on people to account for things that they'll say we're not there as individuals, even though accountability is organizational. And unfortunately, our work is to look at the past, what killed the patient, so as to inform the... So I'm saying that frustration also comes to us when we have to deal with the cases where the people who physically there are no longer present. But I think the question that Comrade Roy was raising was, in terms of the reports that he has read, that we have read, press reports, which indicated that Ms. Mata worked in a public works where Shezi was the DG. He was saying, does this not create perception of a conflict of interest? And I think what we expect from the department is to say, that being the case, if indeed that was the case, that she worked at public works,
these are the steps.
We either do not think there was any conflict of interest or even a potential conflict of interest, or yeah, indeed, it could have been one of those lapses that have happened in the department in the past. So that we, like all the other things that we have found that we're not happy about, where we're either in agreement that indeed this was wrong, implying therefore that going forward these are the kind of things we must avoid, or you verify, no, we don't think there's anything wrong, these are facts, and then we're able to clear that and move forward. So I think the question was, the report indicates that she chaired the committee, she had worked in public works under Mr. Shezi. Was that appropriate to have allowed her to chair the committee that took the decision to award, that ultimately awarded the tender? So I think that's the point. That's the question. And to which, well, you expect a response here. If there's no response and it requires further taking up, then that's the response that you get from the department.
May I just ask that, I think the issue really is that somebody by the name of Ms. Mate was a director who worked with a consultant who was appointed. Perception is that there could have been some collusion. Now, I think on assumption, none of us here can say, yes, it happened, yes, it was a fact, well, yes, it wasn't, except her.
I think the question was that appropriate? I think that's the question. Before we, and for, we don't want to take it to the level of alleging that there was collusion.
No, we didn't say collusion. Was it appropriate?
Or was it appropriate?
So if we have worked in public works with somebody else, in legislature, parliament here, you come to the department, that person is outside the department.
You declared interest, by then.
Oh, we talk about declaring interest here.
Oh, you say?
That I know this person. Yes, now we're talking about declaring interest. That I understand. Did that interest get declared? Because it can't be that we work together, therefore, the given that we are corrupt.
We haven't even used the word corrupt. We're using
whatever.
No, appropriate. Let's just take one word. Was it appropriate?
Randy, let's just tell us what did you declare, please. Because I really wouldn't like us to leave this thing unattended. It's a very, very
good thing. If you come with minister, but she can talk about declaration, but whether it was appropriate or not, I'm not sure if it's calling. I'll be happy to hear from the acting DG or from yourself to say, yes, she worked at Public Works. Ms. Chesu, who got the tender of the committee that she was chairing, from where we're standing, in line with the policies and the practices and what we know and understand, we don't think there was anything wrong.
From where I'm sitting as acting DG, if any of my colleagues had worked previously in a government department with an individual who is now operating outside there, I wouldn't. I understand that the member is saying that it's a perception, but how do you do a declaration on a perception that might exist? I would have to go back and have a look at the declarations which every member has to make prior to the sitting of a DBAC in terms of conflict of interest. But I certainly at the time was not aware that there was any conflict of interest declared. The comment that I wanted to make earlier on, Chair, when the Honourable Member said I was preempting what he might be asking, was just to indicate to you that this particular contract was also part of the special report by the Auditor General, which you considered in 2010, which did result in the dismissal of the CFO at the time. And
this
particular contract. And I mentioned in one of my responses to you earlier on that in terms of variation orders, that I believe that all the variation orders were approved in accordance with procurement policies, but that there were four to a value of $16.2 million which were not approved and which were declared as irregular expenditure. Now, that contract, together with those particular variation orders, is part of an SIU investigation at the moment. And that was the point that I wanted to make, which I find now I wasn't preempting the Honourable Member.
Are these the four contracts you mentioned on page 99 where we have comments from the department? Page 99, are those the four contracts you're referring to there? Four cases. To 16.2 million rand. Eventual expenditure, those ones.
That's correct.
Are still under investigation.
They with the SIU, as the committee might be aware or might not be aware that a proclamation has been issued by the President in terms of the SIU work. The proclamation was dated the 21st of September 2012, and there is quite a long list of issues which have been referred by the Department to the SIU for investigation. It's quite the long list of, and that was part, some of those, Chair, come out of the aspect where we have a look at our weaknesses in terms of what's come out of the AG report and have identified in some of the contracts that there might have been some irregularities. So not investigating ourselves, we've referred those contracts to the SIU unit to investigate on our behalf. And they're included in that initial list which was provided to SIU when the proclamation was issued in 2012.
Chair, also under the same page, comments from the department, it is indicated that the minister appointed a business process review committee. I wonder if we can be given a progress report as to if that review committee has made any kind of interim or final report on the business practices in the department. Number one, if we can give some kind of update on where we are with that committee. And two, what has that committee cost us? I imagine that there would be a number of consultants possibly also assisting that committee. What has the cost been of that of the work undertaken by the committee? But in particular, the progress report.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. This is really going to be part of the next audit outcome in terms of expenditure on the committee. It was also not originally part of the Auditor General's work when they reviewed consultants from 2006 to 2000 or whatever. So we are not sure how it actually features yet. It would be helpful if it's clarified. Because certainly we would have actually dealt with that matter when AD would have asked that question. However, we have already given the Ad Portfolio Committee, Honourable Chair, progress report, because there was an interim report tabled which led to the great improvement in the department, which our other chair has actually said that he didn't think and that Water Affairs would ever be turned around in his lifetime. Neither did I. It is as a result of that work that has been done through VPR. We are happy to come for a full day or the time you may allocate us on a chair to actually talk to you about that turnaround strategy and the impact of the VPR. However, it's not part of the consultant's report that the AG actually
is actually. I'm asking the question because it is listed there as a comment on the department in relation to this report, but if a progress report has been given to the portfolio committee, I think it would be very useful for our committee before we engage the department on the annual report. It would be very useful for us either from that committee or from the department to get a copy of the report. But I ask the question in relation to it appearing here in the, on page 99. But Chair, those are my questions. There are some other matters dealt with in this report, which I have not referred to, have not asked questions on, but I'm sure colleagues will fill in any gaps that I've left.
No, I think I remember you raised this in the morning when I came. If we have now program a day to engage with the department on the because if we engage with them on the annual report, I'm not sure, Comrade Minister, is it that the Auditor General will report on it on this financial year that has just ended? So it means last year's annual report of September will not have anything on the progress of this Business Process Review Committee. But we'll underline it, it's fine. September is around the corner. You will have a look at it, and if there is need for us to sit down around it, I'm sure we can be able to make time. All right. You think you're done? Or taking a breather? You're done? Okay. Dr.
Rabi? Thank you, Chair. The Honourable Minister mentioned that the department has got a turnaround strategy which they want to implement. But my question, Chair, relates to page 98 and 99. It relates to job evaluation. What the Auditor General says is that the department did not safeguard documentation provided by the consultant. I'd like to have the views of the department on that. And then the communication channels of the department were contrary to the initial arrangements. I think we'd like to have clarity on that as well, Chairman. And then they said that there was poor planning by the department to identify posts to be evaluated. I'd like to have clarity on those key issues. Thank you, Chairman.
While it is looking, again, let me just go a little bit a step backwards. That one of the members indicates that minister indicated that they want to implement the turnaround strategy. No, we don't want to. We are in the middle of implementing a turnaround strategy, right in the middle, almost going to an extent that we can now see the differences. Very vast improvement. And all these other things that we're talking about financial management, by the way, if I may say also, that our target, as the FNDG said, is that even on financial management, our target related to that turnaround strategy is actually to have a clean audit by 2014, or AG, we may have it this year. We don't know, but we target in 2014, amongst other things. So we're not planning to implement a turnaround strategy. It is being implemented. Amongst others, it deals with these issues of job evaluation. This thing that's referred to the job evaluation inability to do that in the past is actually a thing of the past. As we speak, the new organogram of the department with business process reviewed class that are actually indicating who is going to be meeting with who, the branches that integrate and work in a business process kind of mode. The other one, not knowing what one is doing, is a thing of the past. So this job evaluation has actually been done already. The structure is with DPSA, the new organogram. So the job evaluation that is being spoken to here that was actually a problem now is no longer going to be a problem as this thing can come. If we had our way, we would be implementing that structure of already the jobs that are evaluated. We'd be starting to doing letting and placing, looking at the relevant skills and the skills all always needed to actually ensure that the department runs smoothly. I think you can talk to the details about what was there for at the time.
Thank you. And the in response to Honourable Dr. Robbie's question, that particular contract was not taken to conclusion. It was terminated before contract value of 3.1 million was actually concluded. From the information that I have and I pulled out from the department, The contractor only concluded 17 job evaluations, and we paid them the amount of 53,000 for that. There was a claim of 255,960, which was disputed and not paid. But that contract was terminated as the PSB didn't actually have the capacity which they contracted to provide to the department, so that contract wasn't taken to conclusion.
Now there will be.
Thank you. And as Minister has indicated, that the job evaluation process is done in-house by own staff through our organisational design unit.
Yes, Comrade.
Thank you, Chairperson. One of the ladies told that the province is responsible to the district office and the district to the local municipality. I'd like to know which district serve Carnarvon, because in 6 years I didn't hear of any water affairs, because when, as we know, that Van Wexley is out of water for almost 8 months now. And the people of Kibeli is coming out to put a street or what his name is. So he's coming from Kimberley every time, and if he ask for water to deliver to Van Wexley, he also said there's no money. So I'd like to know to which district was he go to or ask for money, and which district is responsible to serve career there.
All right. Ekindiji, can we deal with this in 10 minutes time once we have rounded off everything? Because I think it's an issue related specifically to somewhere in the Northern Cape. So can we do that information once we're done? Can we bring this engagement to an end? Comrade Minister, is there anything you would want to add?
Yes. Thank you, Honourable Chair. Just 2.5 issues. One is really very political. We didn't touch on that matter here today. It does appear in our reports about what one would call javelin. Javelin. Post-employment, what do you call it? Post-employment contract. Get out of government and then do the work the other side. We do fight that matter from time to time. It's probably more or less the same as the, not more or less the same. This one is a perception that we're discussing. This particular one of Javelin is real. So it's not that really a perception that we can chase. I want to ask through you that we work together in ensuring that there's fruition to finalization of the post-employment arrangements into the future. Because such reports will keep coming here that so-and-so was appointed in the cabinet is now coming back as a consultant. There's no rule, and there are no clear regulations. I do know that at government level there is an attempt right now to actually formulate that arrangement as to say it's regulated its policy, cooling off period, how long could it be, and so on. All those things, so that we don't have recurring kind of reports of this nature. Secondly, I thought that we should probably just address the issue of going forward, a report like this one, and it's a general point I'm making. Honourable Chair, in line with what you said earlier on. I read the Department, the Auditor General's report saying that it is actually a very good guideline of ensuring that we are advised not to go and fall into the same kind of trap going on. And therefore, I think that going forward, because I think that Auditor General does accept, as we went through this report with them, they did indicate not accept that. This is the first of its kind, isn't it, that reports that we've done. On this kind of an audit. And going forward, I think it's important, we will have a discussion with Auditor General as to how we actually deal with this. As you can see, a lot of information could have been provided, but I think the adequacy of the time was something else in terms of the methodology of auditing this kind of a thing. I just thought that I should raise that. Lastly, the very stony point about lack of planning and planning. From our side, we would like to assure you, in both departments, environmental affairs and water affairs, that we really want to actually improve. And we want to see you seeing the improvement in our lifetime on lack of planning and issues of planning versus implementation of programs. We do work with Treasury, and we do hope our Treasury is also committed to that. In terms of planning, ensuring that their finances and funds available, so that we actually don't have situations like where we have shortage of, projects that are identified in the APP that we must do, and then must do, that are a must do, and yet you don't actually have funds for that. We know that Treasury won't manufacture more funds to actually do this project, however, we can't leave them. That doesn't, however, mean that there isn't quite planning. You're planned, but you need to go to a detailed level of the plan, and some of these things are practically a little bit difficult. We want to assure you that we'll go through those motions. Thank you very much.
No, Renewal, Comrade Minister, to the acting DG and the official. As you have noted, the intention of all our questions was to give you the opportunity to clarify issues so that when you leave us here, you are very clear about whatever issues might have been raised by the AG or whatever issues that might have been researched by our officials. And just to lay to rest through you, Comrade Minister, Ms. Martin, that I think from our side there was no suggestion, there's no information that suggests that there was any wrongdoing. However, it is not correct for us to seek to find out that this circumstance of relationships, what are their impacts or potential impacts in terms of processes in the department. So I think we are now better positioned because we're supposed to write a report to Parliament on this report, but we're still awaiting this engagement so that we could say we've gone through all the reports, this is what we've found, and these are the things that we think need to be done in government to address some of the issues raised. We want to thank the AG's office. Finally, we're done with this report. We found it very useful, and I'm sure government has also found it very useful in terms of, putting into sharp focus some of these deficiencies that might have been assumed to be there or might have been assumed to be functional, but which have been found to be very deficient. Thank you very much, COVID Minister. COVID, until tomorrow. Tomorrow is our plenary meeting. May stuff to the red. Go and read those reports that we need to go through tomorrow. Thanks.
Sorry.
I'm not gonna love it, but I'm
no, I mean, then I'm so sorry.
Oh, okay.
Then we're gonna lose that anyway. Who goes?
Mama, it's a quick cup of blood.
Oh, it's a quick
cup. Oh, okay. So, you have a good one, you have a good one.
Thank
you. Yeah, I'm going to go.
Yeah.
Thank you.